Beaver buttholes.
Beaver buttholes. Love it. I was so prepared for it to taste horrible, like alcohol.
Me too.
But it just tasted a lot like peach. Like, it had extra peach in it.
Yes. I forgot how fucking ginormous these shot glasses are. They're it just big. Kept coming. I was like, oh, okay. We're here now. My bad. I underestimated you.
Don't underestimate me ever again.
Welcome back, guys. We missed you.
We missed you. You said welcome back, but you didn't say to what.
Welcome back to Gumshoe Weekly.
The epicenter of murder, mystery, and mayhem. Emphasis on the mayhem.
Do you want to tell them why we weren't here last week?
We added another. Should we tell them our names first?
Oh, Jesus Christ. I'm your host, Brianna.
I'm your host, Joaquin. And we were not here last week. Sorry, guys. Sorry. Love you. Because my sister had a baby.
We added another little gumshoe to our little click.
Our click. Ain't nobody fucking with our click. Click. Click.
I hate you. I hate this. I gotta leave.
I'll keep going. Doesn't it go like 45 more times and then the song ends?
I don't know.
I'm pretty sure that's it.
Okay. Well, we're back now. You dare fret.
Yeah.
We're here. We're queer. We're ready to rock.
And we're unused to it.
Yeah. I have to constantly remind myself not to yell that out at work. I'm here. I'm here and I'm queer.
Get used to me.
Yeah, I constantly forget I should not yell that at work. I have to be a little professional.
I love that.
Okay. Well, do you have a question?
Yes. What's your favorite position to sleep in?
I like to sleep on my left side. I face the wall in my house. I face the wall. Alonzo sleeps behind me by the door. So if the robbers come, they kill him first. Mm-hmm. But I like to scoop a pillow into my body. I've been that way since I was younger. Because I used to sleep in a day bed, and my bed was the bottom one. So instead of being
sucked... You mean bunk beds?
No, a day bed. Have you ever seen a day bed?
Yeah, but they have beds underneath them. Oh, a pull-out one.
Yeah. So my bed was the underneath one.
You slept in a drawer.
No, technically all I did was sleep on a bed with wheels. Because I didn't have the fancy ones that was like a draw. It was just that. It was just a bed on a spring that could come up. Because you can make the day bed into like a whole bed. Like you can make it into like a queen size bed. Because you can pull it out and then pop it up. My God. The reason I sleep that way is because...
You curl around a pillow.
Technically underneath, I was... underneath the bed. I can see underneath the bed. And it scared me. So I used to put pillows in that little hole. Mm-hmm. Now this is weird. This is weird now. I'm so used to having a pillow next to my body that I sleep now around it so that I can stay on the bed. And the monster doesn't take it.
Oh, you. Oh, you're such a delight.
And that's how I sleep.
You're such a card, Brianna. Let me tell you.
Never know what you're going to get.
Yeah, you're such a card. So this is something I've only started doing, I think, in my later life. I've always had, like, a lot of pillows on my bed. But now I do this thing where I make a pillow exoskeleton. So, like, literally one under my head, right? And then one under this arm, one under this arm. I'm usually on my back, or I'll be on my side. The pillows don't change position. They just change closeness to my body.
Okay.
I scoot them to the edge of my body. So it's touching me. And then I'll either be on my side or on my back. But if I'm on my back, then it's two under my legs. Or it'll be one under my leg and then one in between my knees. But it's literally a pillow exoskeleton. It surrounds me.
That's too many pillows.
I usually have like 9 pillows.
I have to sleep with exactly 3 pillows.
Why?
I have to have two under my head.
No.
And one, I have to, my buddy pillow, I have to sleep with my buddy.
The two under your head is insane to me. Because the neck pain alone. I started to get such bad, like, neck pain from my pillows. And I went through, like, 3 months where I had to sleep with no pillow under my head.
That's crazy.
But it would hurt my neck so bad.
That's ridiculous. I've never heard of such a thing.
And then it just hurt my neck so bad that I had to go back to basics. Babies don't use pillows.
I know, it's and their barbaric. Necks
are fine. Babies are barbarians.
I have to sleep. So one pillow is kind of technically like this, and then the other pillow is like this. So it's kind of like a, like, so, because I like punch my way up when I sleep. You have the one
standing? That's the worst. Every time I see it's like somebody under it, like it cups that, it. They have to be perfectly in the same exact spot.
No,
for me.
Mm-mm. My problem is that, I'm trying to run away from my problems so hard in my sleep that I'm punching my way up. So I have to have a pillow stop my pillow from moving.
That's your what neck. It is. But I imagine that pillow is slightly underneath the other pillow.
I don't know. I guess.
Your head is, like, up, and then it's also up again.
I guess. I don't know.
I just like your neck, your spine. You don't care about your spine?
It doesn't bother me.
Hit me up in 2 years when you're like, I am using zero pillows a night to try to reset my neck.
That's just...
Because I'm so old.
I don't
even. I used to sleep with two pillows every single night. Now I sleep with one. Mm-hmm. And it's a privilege. Because I slept without any.
But I have, like, one of those, like, hotel pillows where you kind of can mush it to whatever you want. So it's not really, like, a hard pillow where you, it's kind of, it is what it is.
What do you mean? Like, it's a memory foam pillow?
No, it's like a feather pillow.
Oh, those are worse.
I love them. I love hotel pillows. They're my favorite.
I'm going to decide because you can mush them now that you have a bad neck. I've decided.
Thanks.
Your neck is bad.
Okay.
Feather pillows? Not conducive to healthy neck or spine syndrome. And it goes, you never seen the commercials where it makes your whole spine down to your knees wavy? Like, it goes, like, your neck, your head is, like, propped up weird. So then, like, that makes this part of your spine be weird. And then it makes the butt part of your spine weird. And then you have to sleep with your knee like this. And then that's causing knee problems.
I also sleep like a... Have you ever seen, like, a chalk outline, almost, where one leg is kind of like, up? No, where they, like, get shot from the back. It's like that, but they have, like, one leg. Here, I'm going to show you. It's like this.
Do you sleep face down?
Like this.
You sleep face down?
No, my bottom half is face down. My upper half is, maybe I do have bad spine problems.
You do, 100%. I'm telling you now, I'm going to save you the visit to the doctor. Just go straight to the chiropractor. It's your spine and it's your neck.
Yeah, my body is face down. Like, my whole hip is facing the bed. Like, my whole torso is flat against the bed. And then my upper half, it's kind of turned this way so I can sleep on my side. Like that. I don't know why.
I also used to sleep all twisty. And I would sleep, like, when you lay... When you're laying down like this, and then you have your one leg fucking all the way up here, like it's like bent, and then it's all the way up, so then your body is like curved essentially, because your back is like here, and then your leg comes up like this, and your like elbows almost touching your leg. That's how I used to sleep. And then I got old. My spinal bifida. My sciatica.
I don't know.
Very interesting.
Didn't think that was weird.
I look dead. I'm completely straight.
I know. I've slept in the same bed as you. And you did not move the entire night. It was fucking
move.
Weird.
I don't move, and I don't know why. I think it's because I'm used to the pillow exoskeleton now. I don't move from the pillows. I wake up, and I push one pillow onto the floor because it's still right next to me. And usually I have to pee in a hurry because I'm old. I'm like... I gotta run to the bathroom, but I'm also old, so you don't run when you have to pee and you're old. Because I have carpet.
The other day.
I, like, eject it, and then I just, like, kick my way out of the blankets, and then I get out of bed.
I also sleep halfway under the blanket. Like only, the blanket's only on my torso.
You've told me this, and you're such a serial killer.
I just, It's really bad.
I pull it up over me, and it's been cold lately, so I have a thin fleece blanket underneath.
Oh my god, no.
That Bob's Burgers blanket is on me, and then I flip that big feather down comforter over me.
You don't then die from
it's
heat.
Perfectly here. I don't sleep with my arms out. I sleep with them in. And it's here. If I'm on my side, on my back, on my stomach, it is here. Mm-mm. The only thing you can see for me is my head.
You're like a floating head.
And sometimes I've been told I sleep with my eyes open. So you come in and I'm like...
That's fucking terrifying.
When I'm trying to go to bed, but I also want to be on my phone, it's fucking annoying. Because I have to lay on my side because I keep my blanket up so high that I have to like shove my hands out. And then I'm like holding them like this on my phone. And I'm like...
Nope. I have a whole way I can be on my phone as well.
Well, I don't charge my phone near my bed.
Oh, I do. It sleeps right under my pillow.
You want cancer in your ears?
What?
Your proximity to a cell phone can cause tumors.
Oh, well.
That's like a fact.
That explains a lot.
That explains my tumors. Anyways,
I sometimes sleep with it under my pillow, but most of the time I'll sleep with it like above. My bed has, like, a little bookshelf area, and I'll put it, like, so it's just hanging over me.
That's terrible, too. Everything you're saying is bad.
I apologize. I don't
we
know.
We couldn't be more different, and it doesn't make any sense, because personality-wise, we're pretty much on par. So I don't understand how we're living this way.
I didn't know you can get tumors from sleeping with your phone.
Just from having it, like, near you too much. Like, if it's, like, if you're one of those people that's on your phone on a phone call for, like, 12 hours a day, then that's, like, they say that it can cause, like, tumors.
All right, let's get into it.
What's the next one? Yes, are you ready to begin?
I sure am.
Okay, do we do our thing?
What's our thing?
I kind of want to just see if you can remember what it is.
Rock, paper, scissors.
I'm proud of you right now. You remember our podcast. Okay. Rock, paper, scissors, shoot. Scissors. Five. Five of them.
Five. Let's do that over.
Four? Rock, are we not counting that one?
No. You're
five? Okay, rock, paper, scissors, shoot. Rock. Rock, paper, scissors, shoot. Rock.
Paper.
Rock, paper, scissors, shoot. Scissors.
I win.
Okay, you win.
Okay, I'll go first. Alrighty. Are you ready?
I am.
To rumble.
Mm-hmm. Let's get ready to rumble. Do you ever play that game?
No.
Ready to rumble? You just quoted it.
I thought that was from WWE.
It is a wrestling game.
Mm-mm-mm. Nope.
You can play this one girl. She has a really high pitched voice, and she just keeps going, "Can't catch me, can't catch me." But if that's if you do the cartwheels around people. But if you're playing against your sister, that's the best character to play because it's just annoying because you can't catch her because she won't stop cartwheeling and okay. saying "Can't catch me" every time she fucking cartwheels. It's really annoying, and that's what I would do.
Okay. All right. Our story begins late in the evening of Saturday, August 4th, 1962. One of the most popular stars of Hollywood lay lifeless in her Los Angeles home. Sorry. Are you settled?
Yeah.
Okay. She wouldn't be found until the next morning when she was discovered lying nude in her bed, face down, with a telephone in her hand. The room had empty prescription bottles littering the floor. And after a brief investigation, L.A. police concluded that her death was caused by a self-administered overdose of sedative drugs and that the mode of death was probable suicide. The next day, papers read, Marilyn Monroe kills self.
Oh, you do Marilyn Monroe.
Yes. Bringing it all back.
Full circle. Next is Kurt Cobain.
So, just a little background on Marilyn Monroe. She was born Norma Jean Mortensen, a native to Los... My brain is so mushy right now. This is not going to be fun. Native to Los Angeles on June 1st, 1926. She had a tumultuous upbringing. Her mother, Gladie Pearl Baker, was mentally and financially unprepared to have children. So Gladie placed her daughter with an evangelical Christian foster parents, Albert and Ida Baldender. Mm-hmm. Yeah. In a rural town, her mother would visit... in a rural town is where they kept where she stood. Her mother came and visited her on the weekends. This is going to be really hard. she was able to get her home when Marilyn was about 7 years old in 1933, but not long after, in 1934, she suffered from a mental breakdown and was diagnosed with paranoid schizophrenia. She would then spend the rest of her life in and out of hospitals with little to no contact with Marilyn, who was taken in by a family friend named Grace Goddard, briefly. But then, at that point, she was in and out of orphanages. Orphanages? Mm-hmm. Because there was rumors that her husband was molesting Marilyn Monroe.
Oh.
So, to kind of keep it hush-hush, she was, like, in and out of orphanages. She would come and pick her up sometimes, drop her off, like, kind of because she didn't really want her. Mm. But Grace ended up taking over the financials and what happened to Marilyn. But in 1944, she decided to take up modeling at 18 and signed her first short-term contract with 20th Century Fox. And that was when she took off. That's when she took on her screen name, Marilyn Monroe. So while she did have a few small roles, she would return to modeling. She was most famously... Nope, that's not the sentence at all. I'm really going rogue here.
Rewriting history.
While she had a few small roles and then she would return to modeling, she most famously posed nude in a 1949 calendar.
Hmm.
That's kind of like what started her sex appeal, I guess.
Nude, you say?
Mm-hmm. She began gaining I think it's that really famous picture of her, like, laying down with the blanket scrunched up.
Well, that doesn't count.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe. I didn't look it up. she began gaining attention as an actress in 1950 after taking on a minor role in The Asphalt Jungle and All About Eve, both two different films. And she was only on the screen for a short time playing a mistress, but her blonde bombshell beauty captured the audience.
Holy shit, I just picked up the fucking... Oh my god, it left... There was a Wi-Fi... And its name was, in all caps, Clap Them Alien Cheeks. And I can't find it now. I'm so upset. Sorry, you can continue. Whose fucking Wi-Fi is that? Okay.
So yeah, her beauty captured the audience. Mm-hmm. This won her a contract with Fox and skyrocketed her acting career in the early 1950s. She was in 1951's Love Nest, 1952's Monkey Business, 1953's Niagara. Oh, she's full-blown nude.
She's full nude.
Interesting.
Right?
But she won international fame and sex symbol status with her 1953 role, Gentlemen's Prefer Blondes. Monroe added to her reputation as a new sex symbol with public stunts that year. She wore a revealing dress when acting as Grand Marshal at the Miss American Pageant Parade and told gossip columnist Earl Wilson that she usually wore no underwear. She was a fire crotch in it.
That's not the term.
What is it?
Fire crotch in it? It's free balling.
No, fire crotching is what they called Lindsay Lohan when she was doing it.
Because she had red pubic hair.
Yes.
She doesn't have red hair.
She's not a natural blonde.
Marilyn Monroe?
Yeah.
She had red hair originally?
Yeah. There's pictures of her with red hair.
Not dyed, though?
I don't think so, because it was before she was famous.
Hmm. Interesting.
By the end of the year, the gossip columnist Florable Moir named Monroe the It Girl of 1952.
Love it.
She really solidified her sex symbolism when, in 1953, she did a Playboy cover feature on the December issue and a centerfold piece. Which probably is what you're looking at, I'm thinking.
That was from 1949.
Well, they used the pictures from 1949. Oh. So they weren't from that year. They used her old pictures. Oh. And then the cover, they used her picture from the Miss American pageant. Hmm. So it wasn't even, like, originals.
Hmm.
In 1955, she was able to showcase her personality more and her comedic talent in the movie 7 Year Itch, which also features the classic scene of her standing over the subway grate in the white dress. During this period, Monroe gained a reputation for being difficult to work with, which would worsen her career as it grew. She was often late or did not show up at all. She couldn't remember her lines and would demand several retakes before she was satisfied with her performance. Her problems would be attributed to a combination of perfectionism, low self-esteem, and stage fright.
Oh.
Yeah. She disliked her lack of control on film sets and never experienced similar problems during photo shoots, in which she had more say over her performance and could be more spontaneous instead of following a script. So, to alleviate her anxiety and chronic insomnia, she began to use barbiturates, amphetamines, and alcohol, which also exasperated her problems. I know words. I'm just so tired. although she did not become severely addicted until 1956, and according to Sarah Churchwell, some of Monroe's behavior, especially later in her career, was also in response to the patronization, sexism, and often bullying by her male co-stars, and directors she worked with.
Mm.
So, fuck them. Fuck sexism.
Fuck them. I believe that.
That's small dick energy, guys.
Yeah.
And we don't fucks with that. So by 1961, Marilyn was troubled by depression and had suffered from mental illness and substance abuse for already several years prior to her death. She was under the constant care of a psychiatrist, including... she grew increasingly erratic in the last months of her life. She lived as a virtual recluse in Brentwood, Los Angeles. I burped and it tasted like that shot.
That wine shot?
Yeah. Monroe, she hadn't completed a film since The Misfits, which was released in 1961. She had spent 1961 preoccupied with her various health problems, and in April 1962 had begun filming Something's Gotta Give for 20th Century Fox, but the studio fired her in early June.
Ooh.
The studio publicly blamed her for the production's problems, and in the weeks preceding her death, she attempted to repair her public image by giving several interviews to high-profile publications. She also began negotiations with Fox on being rehired for Something's Gotta Give and for starring roles in other productions. However, it was after midnight at around 3 a.m. on August 5th, 1962, her maid Eunice Murray noticed Monroe's bedroom light on. And when she found that the door was locked and Marilyn was unresponsive to her calls, she called her psychiatrist, Dr. Ralph Greensom, who earlier in the day had asked Eunice to stay the night with Marilyn.
Mm.
He gained access to the room by breaking a window. Entering, he would find Marilyn dead. The police were called sometime after, and by dawn, Marilyn's bungalow yard was swarming with reporters. Monroe's body was transported to the Los Angeles County Coroner's Office to undergo an autopsy. Performed that same day, the toxicology results showed her blood contained high levels of chloral hydrate when she died, likely from sleeping pills and the barbiturate nembutal. What are words?
You're doing great.
She was only 36 years old, so very, very young. Her close friends, and most others came out claiming that she was murdered. They didn't understand why authorities were trying to cover it up either. So the, like, right off the back from her death, like, everybody she knew was like, that doesn't sound right. Like, she was perfectly fine. We made plans to go to the movies, or we made plans to do this. And last time I saw her, she was happy-go-lucky. But that doesn't necessarily mean anything, you know?
Mm-hmm.
especially for such high profile people, you know, you got to keep some sort of persona on. Mm-hmm. Who knows? I forgot the name of the last person to talk to her, but he said that when they were talking on the phone, she was kind of, the way she was talking was like she was saying goodbye. Like, oh, tell your wife I said goodbye, you're such a great person, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. That kind of thing. But a lot of her friends were like, no, this is a cover-up. Why are they trying to cover it up? What's going on? Mm-hmm. In recent decades, a lot of conspiracies have come to light, the most famous being that Robert Kennedy orchestrated her death to save his brother, John F. Kennedy, from having his reputation ruined over an alleged affair between the two.
Spicy.
Yeah. So, Gianni Russo, who is an actor, mostly known for his role in The Godfather. He plays one of the brothers, I believe. He's the one who was kind of like pushing this theory a little bit, because at some point when he lost his virginity to Marilyn Monroe when he was younger, mm-hmm. which is now rape. mm-hmm. I think he was like 11 or something like that. 11 or 14.
Ew.
And she was like a grown ass woman.
Ew.
Yeah. So.
Ew to both.
Yeah. So he was pushing that like, oh, he was the, like, putting it on the map like, oh no, it was this. This is why. She was murdered. She didn't die. She didn't kill herself. Mm-hmm. It's all a cover-up. So Russo explained that the mob and the Chicago crime boss Sam Ginciana, I don't think I'm pronouncing that right at all, were after the actress in order to get to the president. The plan was to film the two and Robert Kennedy having a threesome and blackmail the president into invading Cuba to return its casinos back to the mob. So that's one of the most famous ones.
That's such a logical leap.
I know, right? I can see them, like, killing her off because she was getting too close. And, like, as you know, men just talk when women are in the room because they think women are dumb. Mm-hmm. And probably sharing stuff that they probably shouldn't have been sharing if there was an affair going on. Mm-hmm. That could have definitely been the case. Mm-hmm. Or she just heard too much and they offed her. Because there are pictures of them together. Mm-hmm. It's not like they never met each other. They've never been in the same room. They've been in the same room together. Why wouldn't they have? I mean, you know, I don't. Why wouldn't they have an affair? Not that, but.
I thought you were going to say, why, like, wouldn't they have conversations? Okay. You guys are in a room together. Y'all fuck it?
I mean, like, it's not far-fetched for a man to cheat on his wife. You know what I mean? Like, it doesn't matter if everybody thinks you're a fucking saint.
A man in power.
Yeah. And that his brother was pretty much trying to cover it up for him. Mm-hmm. So, my favorite theory, though, is during the 1960s, there was no widespread conspiracy theories about her death. But the first allegations that she had been murdered originated in an anti-communist activist Frank A. Capel's self-published pamphlet, The Strange Death of Marilyn Monroe, which surfaced in 1964, in which he claimed that her death was part of the communist conspiracy. He claimed that Monroe and U.S. Attorney General Robert Kennedy had an affair, so the brother and her had an affair. Mm-hmm. Not the other one, which she took too seriously and was threatening to cause a scandal. And therefore, he had ordered her to be assassinated to protect his career. In addition to accusing Kennedy of being a communist sympathizer, he also claimed that many other people close to Monroe, such as her doctors and ex-husband Arthur Miller, were communists. He was just calling everybody a fucking commie.
Yeah.
So Capel's credibility had been seriously questioned because his only source was this is the best part. Capel's credibility had been seriously questioned because his only source was a columnist named Walter Winchell, who in turn had received much of his information from Capel. Therefore, this meant he was citing himself.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was my favorite part of this whole thing.
Oh my god.
LAPD Sergeant Jack Clemens aided him in developing his pamphlet, and Clemens became a central source of conspiracy theorists. He was the first police officer on the scene of Monroe's death and later had made claims that he had not mentioned in the official 1962 investigation. He alleged that when he arrived at Monroe's house, her housekeeper was washing her sheets and he had a sixth sense about something going on. Something was wrong. Something's amuck. So, Capel and Clemens' allegations have, however, been linked to their political goals. Capel dedicated his life to revealing an international communist conspiracy. And Clemens was a member of the Police and Fire Research Organization, which was FIPO, which sought to expose subversive activities which threaten our American way of life. FIPO and similar organizations were known for their stance against the Kennedys and for sending the Federal Bureau of Investigation letters incriminating them. A 1964 FBI file that speculated on the affair theory between Monroe and Robert Kennedy is likely to have come from them. So they were making up all of this bullshit because they thought they didn't like the Kennedys and they thought they were communists.
Mm-hmm.
So, other theorists, those are, like, the main big ones. There's other ones, like, some people believe that, they're more suspicious of her money, and those are who are in control of it, and purposefully injected her with barbiturates to get full access to her funds. Most agree her death was likely achieved by a fatal injection, which was supported by the lack of pill capsules in her body and a small mysterious bruise on her lower body that has never been explained.
Mm.
Obviously, nothing has ever been proven. It's still seen as a suicide to this day. I think she was killed, but whatever. My opinion does not matter.
Was she one of the ones they thought that the CIA killed her, or is that a different?
Yeah.
They thought the CIA mm-hmm. killed her. Because of JFK, right?
Yeah.
Something with JFK.
That they hired, like, that was the first theory that Robert Kennedy Jr. hired the CIA or the FBI or something like that to kill her because she knew too much. Or she was going to, like, mess up his brother's reputation.
Mm-hmm.
So. And that's the story of the Marilyn Monroe. There's so many theories. But my favorite is the Frank Capel one. Dude was citing himself. He was like, write a bibliography source where me. You got your source. And then he's like, pamphlet written by Frank Capel.
This is it.
This is my story, and I'm sticking to it.
That's wild. Okay, so I'll go now, I guess.
I mean, we could just pack it up and I can go home.
Right? We got a long enough Fuck episode. It. Okay, I'm not even turned to the right fucking page.
Yeah, I'm doing some other shit.
I'm just like, I can't talk right now. I'm busy doing hot girl shit. So, my information I got from the Encyclopedia of Virginia.
I didn't cite myself.
Do you want to do it now? In the middle of mine.
No, I'll just say mine at the end.
No, just say it right now.
And then you'll start your story again, right? And then
I'll just cut the whole part out. You're going to say yours, and I'm going to continue citing after you say it. So it'll literally be in the middle of my citation.
We should just cite on top of each other. Just
okay, you do one, yeah, and then like, I'll do
we'll
one.
Just talk
okay,
like
back
and forth. Right
so now you
okay,
do one.
Go. No, how we were just talking. Okay,
so I also did the America's Library, the Smithsonian, the History Channel.
Okay, so we decided that Joaquin's gonna...
I'm gonna go first, and then she's gonna go, and then I'm gonna go, and then she's gonna go.
I'm gonna cite my sources on my old story that's just done, and you're gonna cite your stories for your new story.
Yeah.
My brain is so mushy.
So, Encyclopedia Virginia.
History.com.
America's Library.
AllThat'sInteresting.com.
Smithsonian.
Wikipedia.
History.com. I did one of the same ones as you.
All right, go.
I have one more.
Oh, I don't have any.
And historycollection.com.
I probably have more. I just don't remember them.
I did a lot of Googling for this boy.
Oh, that's good.
Okay. In the late 1500s, the English traveled to North America intending to set up camp permanently. They wanted to colonize. They were met with shortage of food and Native American attacks. You never know if those are real attacks or if it was maybe you attacked first. So then it'd be retaliation. So don't know. Wasn't there. Mm-hmm. But historically. But we guessed. Also, I'll have you guys know that I edited a lot of my stuff to be not offensive words, because these legit websites were still using the offensive ones. And I was like, yeah. Yo. But literally use them interchangeably with Native American. And I'm like...
Small dick energy, guys.
Yeah. I'm like, what is the point? Like, what? You're supposed to be historical.
Yeah.
You're supposed to be like...
Politically correct.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I found it in poor taste. So, in 1584, a voyage led by Philip Amadas and Arthur Barlow landed on North Carolina, the coast of what would later become North Carolina, and made contact with Algonquian. With Algonquian-speaking Native Americans, befriending two named Manteo and Wanchees, who joined them in their return to England. Manteo was a chief, and Wanchees was from another tribe, but they were integral to establishing relations between English and Native Americans in the area. They did not know each other, but Manteo remained friends with the English, and Wanchees viewed them soon as captors.
How is his name spelled? Manteo?
Manteo. M-A-N-T-E-O. Historically, nobody knows how they convinced them to come with them back to England. Raleigh, who was the man funding these trips, kept quote-unquote tight control of their schedule, and he dressed them like the English to draw less attention. They helped the other Englishmen learn Algonquian. Jesus. They helped teach the Englishmen learn Algonquian, all the ones that were going to go back with them. And then 8 months later, they returned home on a second voyage. This voyage, granted by Queen Elizabeth, with the intention to settle Virginia, and, this voyage, granted by Queen Elizabeth to settle Virginia, landed in 1585 to set up camp, explore Chesapeake Bay, create maps, paintings, and descriptions of the native culture, prey upon the Spanish, literally the phrase, find gold and silver, and to convert the natives to Christianity.
This is why I think religion is such bullshit.
Mm-hmm. This colony was known as Roanoke.
Did you see American Horror? Do you watch this?
No,
I think you would really like it.
Do you think so? I had a really hard time watching the first episode, and I never turned back.
Of what?
Of American Horror Story. The first
one?
The first ever.
Really? Oh my god, that's my favorite one.
That one was so fucking, with the dude in the black lycra suit.
Yeah, it's a little much.
I was like, I tried to watch it literally with Dana when we were teenagers, and we both were like, I don't really like this. This isn't scary in a good way.
Yeah, I can see that. But they did a Roanoke season.
Yeah.
With Lady Gaga.
I did not see Lady Gaga. That's how it's pronounced.
I didn't like that season, though. It wasn't very good.
So, in less than than a year, they beheaded Chief Pemisipan, originally Chief Wangina, and they fled back to England.
What dicks.
Yeah.
Small dick energy, guys. Is that my new thing?
That's obviously the name of the episode. Small dick energy, guys. How do you say it? How do you write it in, like, a...
professional way?
No, in a, like, a very condescending way, like the way that you're saying it. Small dick energy, guys. With disappointment. How do you type it with disappointment is the question.
Dot, dot, dot. Small dick energy, guys. Dot, dot, dot.
Dot, dot, dot. So a third voyage was approved, led by John White. They cast off on May 8th, 1587, and he brought with him more than 100 settlers, including families, and his pregnant daughter, Eleanor Dare, who would give birth to the first English child born in the New World, Virginia Dare. Before setting off, they sent a ship to check on 15 soldiers they left there after leaving their last expedition, and found none of them. He said in quotations, we found none of them, nor any sign that they had been there, saving only we found the bones of one of those 15, which the Native Americans had slain long before. Even with this discovery, one of the sailors, upon landing, implies that their men were not welcome to reboard the ship and that they should stay at Roanoke because Fernandez, the man running the ship, still hoped to make it to the West Indies to loot Spanish ships. This was during the war against Spain. So previous to them not finding this, not finding the 15 soldiers, on the voyage in which these 15 soldiers were left there, they were returning to catch up with the other settlers that they had left there from the first voyage. And when they got there, they were all gone.
That's okay, yeah.
And then this time, the 15 settlers they left behind, which were soldiers, were also gone. Only bones of one of them there.
Which is just disappearing.
Yeah, so mm-hmm. Two times the sets of settlers were gone. Not that many people, though, both times. White wrote in his notes, being the governor, he said it suited not the governor to contend with the decision for them all to not sail back with Fernandez. No one understands why he wouldn't argue this point. Like, there are men here that we left here that are missing now. We've only been gone for 8 months. Like, we're not going to stay here with our families and shit.
Yeah. So it's unsafe. We don't know what the fuck happened to them.
Yeah. So a lot of historians say that they think that they had agreed with it. He'd agreed on it with Fernandez, and then he just later on wanted to blame him for it.
Oh, what a dick.
So it took them like a month to unload all three ships. And Fernandez was ready to set sail, but needed one of them to come and represent them to give the update to Raleigh, who was the one who was paying for this. No one volunteered, and the settlers, for some reason, demanded White, their leader and most experienced, to represent them. Their governor, they wanted to send away. So he claimed that he at first refused.
Yeah.
And then had them put it in writing. They put it in writing on August 25th, and then he set sail on August 27th, 1958. They'd only been there for, like, a month. And his daughter had given birth already. So, it was not until 1590 that another ship set sail for Roanoke. After the fleet White was on was in a sea battle with a French fleet.
Why are they, like, not getting the hint, though?
What?
They want to keep going back.
Well, he left his family there.
Why? Why would you do that?
Well, he only left to go be a representative to be like, here's how we're doing.
Yeah, here. I get that he didn't want to. Why would you stay there again, though? Why would you bring your people? Why wouldn't you move?
Well, that's the thing, is they got there, and then for some reason, they were like, you can't come back with us. And he was just like, I fucking guess. And then didn't say, like, no, I'm coming back with you or anything like that. So, ended up being delayed because of this French fleet attacking his ship for 3 years.
Oh my god.
So, 1590 is when he finally set sail again. And he left in 1587, a month after they landed there originally. So he doesn't even fucking know how they're doing. Because they'd only been there for a month. Then he was gone for 3 years. So they landed on August 18th, 1590, which would have been his granddaughter's birthday, the baby that was born there, her third birthday. They landed to an abandoned encampment.
Oh my god.
All to be found was the word Croatoan carved into the post of their gate to the village. And then CRO was carved in a tree. As well. They did not find any bodies. The settlers had originally agreed that if they had to move, this is how they'd tell him. If they were under duress, they'd put a cross above it. And then, so he was relieved to find no cross. So relieved that when a storm stopped him from sailing to Mantillo's Island to look for them, he sailed to the West Indies and then back to England.
So he was just like, forget it, it's chill.
Yeah. The Croatoan Island is literally right there.
Yeah.
But it was hurricane season, and so he was like, I'm gonna go home. Fuck this.
Oh my god.
Yes.
But they wrote that, not anybody else.
Well, they're pretty sure that they wrote that, just because it was the agreed upon, if we leave, this is what we're going to do to tell you. And they didn't put the cross. It was like a Maltese cross or something. They didn't put it above the word or anywhere. So he was like, okay, so they weren't in danger when they moved. And all of their buildings had been disassembled.
It wasn't like it was abandoned.
Yeah, so it was like they didn't leave in a hurry.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, yeah, they didn't leave in a hurry.
I always thought, I didn't know anything about this story. I always thought it was just they disappeared and these words were written on the walls. Not the walls, the trees or whatever.
Like you didn't know that that was a pre-agreed upon thing?
Yeah.
I didn't know either. I just knew that it was like carved into a thingy. So there are a lot of theories about what happened to them.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So let's get through some of the basics. They think that a disease came that wiped out the whole colony. They wouldn't have had immunity to it, which is what wiped out a lot of the Native Americans. So they thought they might have caught a plague or something like that. But that doesn't explain no bodies. There's also the theory that they were killed by hostile Spaniards who had come north from their settlements in Florida. Maybe they were at war because they were both trying to colonize the United States, America. There's a theory that they might have tried to sail back to England and got lost at sea. I don't think that they had a boat, but they could have made one, maybe. I don't think they left them one, because previously, that's why they left the settlers there. It's because they didn't have a boat for the 15 men. Then they came back and they were fucking there. There's also the theory that the Native Americans attacked and killed them all. Again, the bodies, where they at?
Where them bodies, though?
Where the bodies at? Where the body, yaddy, yaddy. So, they thought it might have been the Croatoans that had killed them.
Mm-hmm.
Because they, for some reason, killed a bunch of friendly Croatoans before leaving. Yeah, it was fucking genius.
Almost like revenge.
Yeah. There was a theory that there was witchcraft involved.
Witches.
Mm-hmm. They think that they might have, the Croatoan might have believed them to be witches and killed them. Or that they were victims of witches who lived in the North Carolina woods. That sounds like a story in of itself. The Croatoans believed in witches and witchcraft. They believed that it was evil, though. There wasn't anything to lead them to believe that Croatoans executed witches, though. Or that witchcraft was involved at all. Except for the disappearance. Fucking beautiful. I forgot about this one. They believed it could have been a Wendigo, as we believe I did an episode on a Wendigo.
Which I keep calling a Wendabago.
A Winnebago is what you say, yes. Which is your basic, you know, human flesh, cannibalism. Which cannibalism was another theory, but this is just it, but ramped up. Mm-hmm. Because again, where are the bones? But this one, they said that, you know, as we all know, Wendigos come from when a human eats human flesh. They slowly turn into a monster and are taken over by the spirit of a Wendigo. So they believe that they are still alive and roaming in the woods as Wendigos.
Mm.
Yes. There was also a spirit on the island that had the ability to absorb humans into the landscape was perturbed.
I like that.
It could turn them into trees, animals, stones, or any other part of the land. So they believe that if they were not treating the land properly, it would have angered the spirit.
And now I will eat you.
Which
and
means,
make you a rock.
Yeah, which means that they're there still. They didn't go anywhere. And then there was also a reptilian devil of the woods, which is an evil spirit that can attach itself to people, making them violent, greedy, or paranoid. Which they believed, the Croatoan believed, led them to turn on each other after their governor left. There's also the theory that they were taken in as slaves by the Native Americans, There was a theory that they did cannibalism on each other. Okay, I'm going to tell you a weird theory.
Mm. My favorite.
So the word Croatoan, we know, was found carved in. Mm-hmm. This one kind of spirals into a very convoluted theory. But hear me out, because I believe it wholeheartedly. Okay, so people don't know why the word was there. It's also connected with other mysterious things. Before he died, Edgar Allan Poe disappeared for a short time.
Hmm.
When he was seen again, he was found to be delirious. And before he died, allegedly one of his last words was Croatoan.
Hmm.
His official cause of death is unknown, and his medical records and death certificate are lost, so we'll never know how he died.
And why he said Croatoan.
Yes.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. In 1888, the stagecoach robber Black Bart carved the word into the wall of his cell before he was released from prison. He was never seen or heard from again. Amelia Earhart's journal had it written in there after she disappeared in 1937.
Oh my god.
Ambrose Bierce, which was a horror writer, slept in a bed in right before he disappeared in Mexico in 1913 that had the word Croatoan carved into one of the posts.
Mm.
In 1921, Croatoan was written on the last page of the logbook of the ship Carol A. Deering when it crashed into Cape Hatteras near Croatoan Island. The ship was missing its entire crew.
Hmm.
So from 1937 to 1940, a few stones were discovered that are supposed to tell the story of what happened to the Roanoke colonists.
Mm-hmm.
They're called the Dare Stones. Because they appear to be written by Eleanor Dare. A lot of people view them as a hoax, but they believe the first stone is authentic. In 1937, a tourist found an inscribed stone and brought it to a university. They couldn't verify whether or not it was or not, but it said that her husband and daughter were both dead and asked whoever found the stone to tell her father. So Ananias Dare and Virginia went hence unto heaven 1591. So they wouldn't have lived for very long, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
On the back it says, On ye Englishman shoe, John White, Governor Via. The other side of the stone said that only 7 of the Roanoke colonists were left alive, and that Native Americans murdered the rest. It was signed EWD, Eleanor White Dare. In 1940, 47 more stones were found, dating until 1599. In 1592, a stone from 1592 claims that the survivors were safe living with a tribe. One said that Eleanor Dare married the local chief. Another said that she had given birth to chief's daughter and the tribe was angry about it. And that she wanted her dad to bring the girl back to England. And then another one said that she died and she had a daughter named Agnes that survived her. Terrible name. They were examined and almost all of them are forgeries. The most prevalent theory that I actually do have some weight to it is the theory that they were taken in by Native American allies, essentially. So, looking at what we know through various archaeological digs, I'm going to tell you what they found in the recent years, and then I'll tell you my backup information on it.
Okay.
So, two separate teams working independently found archaeological remains suggesting that the settlers split into two groups and then that they wove themselves into different Native American communities. So, one team excavating near Cape Creek on Hatteras Island, which was 50 miles southeast of Roanoke, then the other one was on the mainland 50 miles northwest of Roanoke. So completely far away from each other.
Mm-hmm.
So Cape Creek is in a oak forest site of a major Croatoan town center and training hub. Trading hub is what I think I meant to say there.
A training hub?
I wrote training, but I think I meant trading. Okay. So in 1998, East Carolina University found a 10-carat gold signet ring engraved with a lion or horse, which would be from 16th century British America. Mm-hmm. Mark Horton, he was working for the Britain Bristol University, found a slate writing tablet and a hilt of an iron rapier, which are both dating back to the 16th century England. Mm-hmm. They found other European and Native American origin penises. Items. Penises. The slate, which had a small M in the corner, was found alongside a lead pencil.
A lead pencil.
They also found an iron bar and a large copper ingot. The dirt dated back to the 1500s, and the Native Americans didn't have metallurgical technology at that time. Mm-hmm. And this was all found in a Native American area, so the reason for the English stuff in there, they were just like, why would this be here? So then at Site X, which is what the other one is called, the one that's inland, they found a watercolor map drawn by John White himself. This was in Albemarle Sound. He had started the drawing in 1585, which was before he became the governor. Through X-ray spectroscopy, they found a four-pointed star, which was red and blue, under a patch of paper, which he had used to make corrections. It looked like it marked a location 50 miles inland, which is around where they speculate them to have moved to, which they believed to have a base that was planted there, but it was hidden on the map just so the eyes of the public wouldn't find it. So they think it's a reasonable destination for the displaced settlers to be. Nicholas Lucchetti of the First Colony Foundation found shards of pottery, which may have been used by Roanoke after leaving the colony. It had a specific type of, like, print on it. It was, like, border wear. So, in the time that it was made, it would have had to come over with them. Because by the time the next shipment came over, it was, like, the 17th century. And they had stopped making that in the 16th century. They also found, in a nearby small Native American town, they found a baluster, which is a food storage jar, early gun flintlocks, metal animal hide hooks, small copper tube used to secure wool fibers, which was what they used before the advent of the hook and eye in the 17th century. So again, it wouldn't have been when the later travelers came. And then their presence in the Native American community was even more backed up by the fact that the Zuniga map, drawn by a Jamestown settler named Francis Nelson in 1607, documents four men that came from Roanoke living among the Iroquois tribe. In the early 1600s to the middle 1700s, European colonists claimed to have met gray-eyed Native Americans who claimed to have been descendants from white settlers. Hmm. In 1696, French Huguenots left records of meeting blonde-haired, blue-eyed Native Americans soon after their arrival along the Tar River. 1709, John Lawson, in his book A New Voyage to Carolina, records Croatoans living on Croatoan Island who claimed that they used to live on Roanoke Island, and they claimed to have white ancestors. William Strachey also claimed to have seen Native Americans living in two-story stone houses that the English showed them how to build. And they also found burial grounds that had, like, Christian markings on them, so it wouldn't have been the Native Americans. Anyways, there's a lot of, like, historical rootings that say that they may have been there, but again, they haven't found a solidified thing. But the fact that so many archaeologists found leavings of them that would look like they were integrated into the society, that looks like the most believable thing, because there were friendly... Not friendly, because I'm sure that they were all their own thing. But there were Croatoans that were allies to them. Mm-hmm. So they could have gone with them.
Yeah, I could see it happening.
Juan Cheese, when he had come back, he had immediately gone to the Roanoke Native Americans and said that the colonizers couldn't be trusted. Oh. And then he never, like, interacted with them again. Whereas Mantillo continued to be, like, a guide, and he continued to dress like an Englishman when he came back. So, yeah.
Interesting.
The thing is, they could have integrated in two separate societies. Like, the Native Americans were half and half as far as accepting them went.
That would make, that makes a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and the, in the Chowanox and the Weapemiox, they had found traces of maybe the settlers living with them for around, like, 20 years. Theoretically. They also said the Chesapeakes might have taken them in. So, yeah. The theory, the biggest, with the most supporting, is that they integrated into the societies. And that's my tea on the lost colony of Roanoke.
That is some piping hot tea.
And that last information from all those archaeology digs had only come out in February of this year.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so it's pretty, pretty new info.
Pretty, pretty new.
Pretty new. The fact that they found tracings in two of the spots is just like, it's too perfect, you know?
It makes too much sense. It all just comes together too perfectly.
With a neat little bow. So thanks for joining us again. Please forgive us for missing last week's, you know, we couldn't stay away. Mm-hmm. We love you. Personally.
And sexually, no.
Sexually.
Okay. Well, this was fun, guys. See you next week.
And platonically. So if you'd like to see correlating photos to our stories or answer our question personally on your own, you can do that on our Instagram and Twitter at
Gumshoe Weekly
and our Facebook at
Gumshoe Pod.
And if you want to email us any fun theories, or if you think you might be a descendant from the Roanokes, which also they offer DNA testing right now. There is a whole program that you can get tested to see if you are one of the descendants of the Roanokes. Anyways, if you want to do that, you can email us at
gumshoeweekly@gmail.com.
Thanks.
Bye.
Bye.